You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Freep Film Festival opens in Detroit Wednesday with a documentary film that takes us right to the heart of one of the most compelling stories in sports history anywhere. It tells the story of how the players who became known as the Russian Five came to Detroit and to the Red Wings and helped power the team to back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Growing up in America, right or wrong, fair or unfair, we were kind of trained to be those Russians. They're bad people. They're against us. We sort of had that mentality, even me a little bit. But all I was concerned about was how can I get good world-class players for the Red Wings?
That from Jimmy Devolano is how The Russian Five begins, the first feature-length documentary from Port Huron native Joshua Reel, getting its world premiere this Wednesday night at a sold-out event in Detroit. With us now is director Joshua Reel and Jenny Fedorovich, who's the producer of The Russian Five. Welcome to both of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
What was the story, the heart of the story you wanted to tell?
I think for me, the thing that really interested me in this is the adversity, the overcoming adversity, is sort of the testament to the human condition, the spirits that just overcome. I think you go back to, 1982 when the Detroit Red Wings were the Dead Wings, and it starts with Mike Gillich and sort of this vision of like, let's rebuild this team. And it's sort of a really Detroit story. It, goes back to our motto of, we hope for better things, we'll rebuild from the ashes. And so you have that, and the Russian players were hoping for better things when they made the difficult decision to come to North America to play. Obviously, the tragedy that happened, and then the team had to rebuild from that as well.
When you think of those names, you think of Sergei Fedorov and Vladimir Konstantinov and Slava Fetisov and Slava Kozlov and Igor Larionov. Wings fans light up when they hear those names. But I don't think until they see this film, people will really understand what was on the line for those men to make that decision. And there was, Jenny, tremendous risk, was there not, for especially in those early days when the Wings had their eye on Sergei Fedorov. What a risk there was for the players and the people at home in Russia.
It's unbelievable, honestly, when that story unfolded in the film, and I actually learned the depth of the story. I was scared how they potentially could have made that decision. I left in 1989 around the same time, and we didn't really leave anybody behind. I don't know how they made that decision. Those people could have been killed. Their families could have been threatened. That's a very, very big thing on the line to leave under those circumstances. It was a scary time.
And you do, I'm going to say this, you do such a fantastic job in your film, in The Russian Five, of taking us back to many years by using not just interviews and film footage, but beautifully done artwork and animation that really puts us all in the moment when Jim Leitz from the Red Wings is reaching out to Sergei Fedorov and saying, come here, and that decision. What was behind that choice of let's not just use old footage and old pictures, but that beautiful animation?
Well, obviously there's parts of the story that there isn't any footage. And so actually when Jenny and I first started talking about the film, animation was on the table, and it was this idea of, the conversation was, how do we do it differently? And I think we kind of gravitated towards something that was a little bit of a comic book, style, but then also with a feel of like the Soviet constructivist collage look, something that's sort of amalgamating the two types, much like the story, where the Russians come to North America and the styles blend.
Absolutely. And so Detroit fans probably remember as Sergei Fedorov becomes the first Russian to arrive at Joe Louis Arena. And then you take us through all the things that it took to get the others to follow, including playing the cancer card to get Vladimir Konstantinov here. I think a lot of fans might not know that story.
Yeah, people don't know. People will not really know most of the stories, except Sergei's story was kind of publicized when Larry King goes on and says the Russian just defected. But the depth of how they actually got the players out, and throughout this research, we found the guy that they were bribing in Russia. And guess what? He's still scared. He was too scared to talk to us. Even all this time has passed, and the things that they were doing and had to do to get out at that time.
Including a fake doctor's note.
Fake doctor's notes, bribes, whatever it took just to get the players out.
Let's listen to another clip. Jimmy Devolano remembering his first meeting with Vladimir Konstantinov. It happened in the dead of night while the Russian team was in Detroit for an exhibition game.
I said, Vladimir, you're an NHL player. We'd like to have you, and we want you to stay. And he looked at me sadly, and he said, I would like to come, but I have a wife and a daughter. I can't desert them.
Plus, he's a captain in the Russian military. So if he deserted, he'd be considered a felon in Russia, which would make him automatically incapable of getting an H-1 visa to play in the National Hockey League.
I said, I understand, Vladdy. I want you to come over here with your family. We're going to find a way to get to you down the road. Don't forget us.
And then the final touch was getting that fifth player, the professor, Igor Larionov. And that was Scotty Bowman's idea?
Scotty Bowman all the way. Scotty Bowman, he's a historian of the game of hockey. I mean, even today, you can ask him, Scotty, who was the third line center of the 1976 Soviet team? And he'll, like that. So Scotty knew, you know, Larionov was the key cog in, for them to play the five-man style. But even more importantly, you know, Scotty knew the kind of person Larionov was and the intangibles he would bring to the locker room, the leadership that they needed at that time.
How did these Russians change the way not just the Detroit Red Wings played, but the NHL played?
I think, you know, the NHL is a league where when something's successful, other teams try to copy it. And the puck possession game became the game, and it is today, controlling the puck. You know, if you have the puck on offense, you're not having to play defense. And so then it becomes sort of a system. And, you know, to this day, the teams that go deep in the playoffs are the teams playing, you know, puck possession. You look at Steve Yzerman in Tampa Bay, he's got Russians and they're playing, the system. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that was the influence of him spending time with the Russian Five.
And I believe the first commentary was, it's watching ballet on ice.
Yes.
So, and we're known for both, right?
Yes, indeed. Well, your film raises something that I think a lot of folks have forgotten in the afterglow of those back-to-back Stanley Cup wins, that not everyone was happy to see the Russians on the ice. This is a moment with Jimmy Devolano talking about getting grief from a longtime friend.
He said, what are you doing bringing all these Russians over? They're going to take my job. I'm a Canadian. I've worked all my life. And this person's still a friend of mine today. Good guy. Good guy. But he gave me hell for drafting all these Russians.
And then this from Steve Yzerman.
The ideology is different. Their values are different. It's just they grew up in a different system. And as a result, they thought differently than us.
So what did you learn in talking to all of these people who were part of this story about what it took to kind of merge them together and to make the Russian Five a part of the Red Wings and vice versa, kind of embrace each other?
Yeah, you know, Brian Murray talks about it in the interview where these guys were good guys. You know, they were good people off the ice. They were good people on the ice. So that certainly helped ingratiate them within the locker room. But the National Hockey League, it's professional sports. At the end of the day, you're trying to win. So if these guys can help you win, they're going to be accepted a lot quicker. And the talent level that Yzerman and Konstantinov and even Slava Kozlov brought, I really think helped them be, you know, a part of the locker room. But there's still struggle. And what we found out is it wasn't until Slava Fetisov came along that the personalities of the three young Russians started to kind of open up.
And why was that?
There's just language and culture. Obviously Fedorov took to the culture quickly. You know, but Vladdy had a wife and a daughter at home, so he's not going out, you know, with the guys as much.
And Slava Kozlov, it's telling that his interview is in Russian. He didn't, everybody knew he didn't really take to learning English. He was not Igor Larionov.
Correct. Yeah. No, Kozzy was great. The one line of English that he spoke in the whole interview was, you know, I think my English is worse than Russian Five. So it didn't make the cut, but I think it says a lot, you know.
I'm wondering, and Jenny, you know, your own experience as an immigrant from Russia, how much of that resistance do you think may have stemmed from what we heard Jimmy Devolano speak at the beginning, that kind of baked in suspicion and mistrust between the two countries?
Well, I mean, ever since we were children in Russia, just like he was talking about Russians were bad people, we were taught Americans are really bad people, really, really bad people. And I think when you grow up listening to that, you're a very, very guarded person because it's just ingrained in your brain, right? Mm-hmm. And then you end up here, of course you're going to be guarded. It's a different culture. We didn't understand that. So, of course, they were very guarded based on the fact that where they came from. And they came here to do the job, and they were not sure what are the American customs, how to communicate necessarily with the people on your team. So I think when they came together, that was a great thing for them.
And it finally did happen June 7th, 1997, that night to remember when the Wings swept the Flyers and won their first Stanley Cup in 42 years. You could not have scripted a better story arc, could you? I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up.
Oh, no. I mean, as we were laying out the arc in the edit, I mean, it just sort of, you know, it really, my job was to just get out of the way of the story and just let it kind of unfold and then just find the emotional beats.
Here's Igor Larionov, followed by Slava Kozlov, talking with sports reporter Ray Lane.
The happiest day in my life. I've been playing hockey for 30 years. It's a great trophy. I'm so happy for everybody and for this town of Detroit.
Very happy for my teammates. They helped me win Stanley Cup, and now I feel very good.
We'll say thank you to you, partner, for your great play, for being a big part of it. Congratulations.
Thanks, sir.
And have a great summer, okay?
Okay, thanks.
But the happiness did not last. Just a week later came the limousine accident. Just to refresh everyone's memories, or people who perhaps were not in Detroit in 1997 when this happened, what happened that night?
You know, it was the last day of the celebrations. They had spent 6 days together. Everyone was preparing to go off in their own directions. You know, some of the Russian guys were going to go to Russia. Nick Lidstrom was going to go to Sweden. Scotty Bowman had actually left for Buffalo. So they spent the day out at the golf outing. And then Vladdy and Slava Fetisov and Sergei Manatsakhanov, the team masseur, they retired, you know. And so they said, we're going to leave early. And they all got into a limo and left, and then the limousine driver fell asleep and he crashed the limo into a tree. And, you know, Vladdy suffered brain torsion, and he was in a coma for 2 months. We weren't sure if he was going to live or die. And that was, you know, it was a really hard time. And, you know, I remember I was maybe 13 or so, 14. That summer, it just, there was a cloud over it in the whole city, I think.
And
it really, it really took the wind out of our sails.
I was working at Channel 50, and we carried the Red Wings games, and I remember covering that story, and it just, the stunning juxtaposition of the joy and the huge victory parade down Woodward Avenue to Hart Plaza just days earlier, and then this immense tragedy. And one of the things I really want to credit your film for doing was showing us the funny human side of Vladimir Konstantinov, that I think a lot of the people, if they just saw him on the ice, thought of him as this big man mountain, a funny, warm, wonderful guy.
Absolutely. He is that, and it's just, it's great that we were able to get some of that footage when he's impersonating
the Terminator.
The Terminator, yes, you know, yes, playing a guitar and just those warm moments. And, you know, he was very well loved and very well known in the Russian community as well. They would often go with us. We actually played soccer together. They played with just regular people. I mean, all around, just great guy. And what a tragedy. They did everything right. They had a driver, and it's just...
They did. And I'm interested, as you talked, you know, sat down, Joshua, and interviewed virtually everybody that had a part in that win, from four of the five Russians to Scotty Bowman to players. You got Yzerman and Shanahan and Chris Osgood and McCarty and Draper, on and on. How much does that accident and talking about that still get to them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I learned actually to stop structuring my interview chronologically, because as we got closer and closer, I would notice that the guys would get more tense as they realized this, oh, we're about to talk about this. So, yeah, I kind of had to change that up a little bit. It still affects guys. I mean, Sergei Fedorov, he refused to talk about it. And so he said, you know, no, I'm not going to talk about it. So I was like, well, can you talk about the fans' response to that, you know, with the memorials they made? And he started talking about that, and he started to crack open the door, and he started to show a little bit of emotion, and then he slammed it shut again. He was like, nope, sorry, guys, that's it. I mean, this is 20 years later, and it still affects them.
What most surprised you in telling the story? And, Jenny, I'm going to start with you. You grew up knowing so many of these guys were heroes to what used to be the Soviet Union and then Russia. What surprised you the most as you dug into this story.
I think what surprised me the most is actually how they all ended up here, because that story is extremely unknown, even to the Russian people. So I think that's going to be a very interesting part of the story, because I've lived through the wins. I was at the games, you know, so there's really no surprise there. I was at the parade with a million people. But I think the front end of the story really surprised me of how they actually ended up here.
Yes, it's great. And having Jim Leitz, who had been the Red Wings executive at the time, who was part of that, was so key to taking us there. What about your biggest surprise?
I think for me, it was the intangibles that the older Russians, Larionov and Fetisov, brought to the team that you don't get when you're watching the games. You don't get as a fan to realize that the culture shift in the locker room as these guys came in. You know, we already had probably the greatest captain in the history of the NHL in Steve Yzerman, so you don't think that there's a leadership vacuum, and there's not. But when you've encountered so many difficult losses, having that sort of leadership of these two guys who struggled to get out of the Soviet Union but said, we're going to do it the right way. We're not going to defect. We're going to stand up for our rights. You know, years later, I guess 7-8 years later, you know, now they're leading the team in different ways. You know, the chemistry is changing, and they're teaching guys things. And the season that they won the Stanley Cup, the Russians took the team out to a big Russian dinner. And it was this moment where they all just came together as one. And Chris Osgood, you know, talks about it. He's like, you know, it's not about the jersey. It's not about the name on the jersey. It's not about where you come. We're just all a bunch of guys trying to win a big silver trophy.
It is a story that it isn't just for hockey fans. It is for people who care about heart, and just an incredible story. And I will say, having watched it, you will want your Kleenex. There are some very powerful, beautiful moments in this. Well, the film is going to get its world premiere. The Russian Five gets its world premiere at a sold-out event this week at the Free Film Festival. There's another sold-out event. You might still get tickets for a screening Friday at the DIA. Where else might people get a chance to see your film?
We're still trying to figure that out now, but if they go to our website, therussian5.com, they can sign up for updates, and we'll hopefully have some pretty soon.
Producer Jenny Fedorovich and director Joshua Real, congratulations on The Russian Five.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.